the fifth parak in Mishlei, concentrating on the Bir Hagra. But I brought the Malbim, the last three psukim, because he's most of something I think is very kedai. Particularly in his interpretation of Pasuk Chafalef, different than the Gra, on the Chol Ma'agloisov Mifaleis, which we'll get to in a moment. Going back to the Pasuk Yutes, at the top of the page that you have there, Ayelas Ahovim V'Alas Chein, Tadeo Yerevucha B'chol Eis Ba'avosa Tishketomit. So Tadeo Yerevucha B'chol Eis Ba'avosa Tishketomit. The Goin says that in the Zivug of any person, and also in the Zivug Elyon is a term that's mentioned many times in Kabbalah, number of times in the Zohar, and subsequently in Sifrei Kabbalah many, many times, hundreds of times. And that's the ultimate Zivug of Zohar and the Kevo, the Zivug Elyon, and it's something that is part of the course of history. Yosef Chaim, for example, in one of his Sfarim called Torah Lishma, which is a Tshuva Sefer, but in that Tshuva Sefer he has a lot of Inyone Kabbalah. He speaks about the Zivug Elyon and the Elif Hashvi. And the Shalach HaKadosh mentions the Zivug Elyon in the part that he speaks about the Sheva Brachas. He speaks about Sais Tosis V'Sogel Akora. He speaks about Akeres Abayis, which we'll get to. And he speaks about the Bon Shalom Yotzah Asadim B'Talmai B'Tzalim Nus Tavnisai V'Hiskin Lo Mimenu Bin Yanad Ayad. He speaks also about the Zivug Elyon. But it's not Aresik in the stories, but the Goin starts out by saying, Kamosha Besaida, Zivug Elyon Hem Gimul Dvarim. In that Zivug Elyon, there are three levels of physical relationship, and of course on the human level as well. Chibuk, V'Nishuk, V'Zivug. Zivug is the actual Chibur itself. V'adalid Humashihi Akeres Habayis. V'Hein, and these are the following terms in this pasuk refer to these different levels of relationship, both physical as well as the relationship on high, which is called the zivug ha'elyon. V'hein ha'yalas ha'ahavim, hi ha'zivug. V'yalas chein, yal is a chaya. Hi ha'chaya shenikres yal, v'hi balas chein, v'hu neged nishuk. Tadeo yervucha, hu ha'chibuk. Ba'avosa tishke tomid, humashihi akeres habayis, v'cheinema bo tomid. And then he says these are the four madregas in Torah learning. So in Torah learning you have four madregas, and these madregas in Torah learning, these are the equivalents, because we always compare Torah to an Isha, and we always compare the one who learns Torah to a Zivug with the Isha, which is Torah. So the combination is a union, and that's a fascinating idea. You never find that somebody studies some subject, he might be immersed in it, might be involved in it, his wife might be upset that he doesn't have any time for her, but you would never consider that that relationship itself is a zivug. Torah is understood not to be something external to the person, but rather, like Esa Layeza Kenegdai, Torah is that union which provides a person with a chibur mamish with the Torah itself, like Zohar and the Keva. So I once wrote an entire kuntris, and I was thinking that being that we spent so much time on this, the last couple of shiurim, that maybe I would take that out of the sefer and reprint it for each and every one of you. It's a very fascinating chibur. But what it does is it shows how many times and in so many different ways an Isha and a Torah have a common denominator. Now, in the particulars of this pasuk, he's not just talking about the Torah as a personality, but also in the physical connectedness. We have in the chibur of Ish v'Isha different levels. This chibuk and nishuk, interesting, fascinating, that of the many isurim in the Torah that the Torah prohibits, there are rare situations where the Torah also provides a da'iraisa warning in anticipation of the prohibition itself. And one of those examples, the classic example, is arayis. where the Torah asers the Sikrevu to the Arayas. Because really, the Sikrevu is really the Arayas already. What I mean to say is, Chazal asered Yichud. Yichud is you're in the same room, but there's no connection yet. But the Torah, when it comes to the connection, even though there's no Maisa Erva Mamish, but the connection is already a kind of Maisa Erva, because it's a form of Chibur. So Chibuk and Nishuk of an Erva is just as Asur Midiraisa. You're not going to be Chayiv Misa for it, but the Isur Diraisa prevails. It's a love. Loi Sikrevu Legalois Erva. So in the Loi Sikrevu Legalois Erva, there is an understanding. It's not just a warning. If you get that close, you'll never be able to stop. It's more than that. It's that this is already the beginnings of the Chibur itself. So the Chibur is Asur in all of its manifestations. And that's why the Torah says, Lo Sikrevu Legalei Serva. The Kiruv is already there in the beginnings of a Legalei Serva. That's what I'm suggesting. And there's no question about it that Bizman Hazeh, Zelu Mazeh Asur Likim, that the whole Parsha of Arayas that the whole world is so immersed in, there's no longer that line that separates the two. It's all one chefza, because Arayas, the whole parsha became it's irrelevant. It starts from lewd pictures even, and it's all one long continuum. So the idea of Leisikrevu that you have here is the opposite, that the chibur with Torah has an ultimate level. But the ultimate level has beginnings, and they are together four. So there's Chibuk, and there's Nishuk, and then there's the actual Zivug, and then there's a fourth level, which is fascinating. Because the fourth level doesn't seem to have anything to do with physicality at all. And that's what the Vilna Gaon calls Akeres Habayis. Now this phrase, Akeres Habayis, we use it all the time. And what pasuk do we quote? Where does the phrase come from? Exactly, from Hallel. Moshivi akeres habayis eim habonim smecha. I don't think there are too many examples of something that would at first appear the opposite of itself, like akeres habayis the way we use it, and akeres habayis the way it would seem the pashut pshat of the pasuk. In fact, the Al-Sheikh makes a very big deal out of this, and he repeats himself. The Al-Sheikh in Tehillim. He repeats himself three or four times, because I think he's very excited about this point. He says, why should she be called Akeres HaBayis? What does it have to do with the Bayis? If she's barren, she's barren. So you know what he says? He says, the Bayis is her Beis HaRechem. She's an Akeres of her Bayis. She doesn't have a womb, or her womb doesn't work. So she's the Akeres HaBayis. It's very interesting. So he says, I, the Medrash, and in fact this Medrash appears several times, in Bereishis Rabbah and in Bamidbar Rabbah, and in a number of minor Medrashim as well. The Medrash says, what is Akeres HaBayis? She Ikara Shel Bayis. And that's how we use it all the time. She's the mainstay of the house. Ikar, like Ikar versus Tafel. So the Al-Sheikh says, that's not Pshuto Shel Mikra. That's a drash. But Pshuto Shel Mikra, look at the pasuk. May Kim may offer dal, may Ashpois Yorim Avyain. What does that mean? He takes the lowest person, a person who's down in the dumps, a person who's penniless, and he lifts him up, 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 up on high, and he makes him successful and wealthy and famous. So what about the Akeres HaBayis? The barren woman he takes, and he makes her an Eim HaBonim Smecha. So the pasuk is clearly saying that he takes someone who is afgehakta tzaris and lifts them up and makes them successful. Whether it's a poor person with money or prestige, or whether it's a barren woman with children. But it's the same point. That it's me bira amikta le'igra rama. So that's the pasuk pshat, says the Al-Sheikh. So what about the Medrash? So the Medrash is a drash. It's tam a drash. I find it fascinating. Barrenness always makes us feel that the mainstay is missing. So it's fascinating that the Parsha Pshat should be almost in the opposite direction of the Drash. The drash says that she's the mainstay, and here it says she's barren. So I had a thought. A woman has many purposes. When the Torah said, "Loi toiv hayosa adam levadoi, esa loi eza kenegdoi," and then later it says, "Al kein yazav ish es aviv es imai, the davak beishtoi v'hayu lebasar echad." Rashi says on the words "v'hayu lebasar echad," they shall be as one flesh. Al yedei havlad. Rashi learns that the vlad, which combines the genetic material of father and mother, is actually the singular reflection of both of them as one. So al yedei havlad, they become basar echad literally. Other mefarshim say v'hayu lebasar echad is even before a vlad. But what I would like to suggest is that whichever way you explain al ken yazay v'hayu lebasar echad, but when it says esa layesa kenegdai, it does not mean because she provides children. In fact, it doesn't mean that she provides him specifically. It means that she is the mainstay of the entity if he wants to go beyond himself. The entity which we call bayis. So when a person is alone, and Chazal keep talking about how he is without this, and without this, and without this, and finally, einai adam, he's just not altogether a person. That's what they meant. Now the idea of having a bias, and that's why Chazal say, me'olam lo karasi, v'ishti ishti, u'sadi sadi. I never called my field, right? I mean, excuse me, ulishayri shayri. I just mixed it up. I never called my wife, and I never called my ox, Ella. I called my wife, Daisy, and I called my ox, Sadi, my field. So when you're speaking about, I don't call my wife, you might think it's a psazatzniyistik thing, that you don't say my wife, you say my home. But when you're talking about a shore, what's the nafkamina, what you call your shore? What is the problem in calling a shore? An ox is an ox. What's the problem? So what is this whole idea that he combines the two together? I never called my wife, I said my home. And I never called my ox, I say my field. So the teretz is, when you call an ox, it doesn't mean much. It's not, it's whatever the ox is when you buy him in the marketplace. But what is the ox for the person? It's his lifeblood. Because with the ox, he has a field. Without that ox to pull the plow, the field is useless to him. And he has no nourishment. He cannot plow, he cannot plant. If he cannot plant, he cannot harvest. If he cannot harvest, he has no food. So the implication of the shor in the true ultimate comprehension of what the shor is for him, it's the sada itself. Now the sada may be worth a fortune, and the shor may be worth much, much less. But he understands the shor to be the sada, because exactly, without the shor, he has no sada, or he has no value from the sada. Same thing is true. You look at a wife. So people have a tendency to make sarcastic remarks about a wife, almost as much as about a mother-in-law. I went to a chasana yesterday, and I'm minding my own business. And I'm sitting there, and someone moseys over to me, and out of the blue he says to me, "In what way is a mother-in-law compared to a snowstorm?" So I wanted to say that to Reb Kiveger, but I didn't. There is no Reb Kiveger about that, unfortunately. So I remained silent. You should know, I didn't say, no. I didn't encourage him. I didn't encourage him. But he told me anyhow, exactly. He says, she comes for 10 hours, and she makes a churban for 2 weeks. So, but next to a mother-in-law, now, when you think about it, it's totally not Jewish at all. In fact, I mentioned already not so long ago that Reb Shamshon Frohl Hirsch says an amazing, amazing thing, which I keep repeating because it's very important to appreciate the subtlety of it and the profundity of it. But it's really very pashut. There's no word in our Tanakh for an engaged couple who are not yet married in any way. What we call in our colloquial what? Now, what do we call the people?
Chosn and Kala.
Chosn and Kala. The word Chosn and Kala does not mean an engaged person. Just like Erisin in Chazal doesn't mean engagement, even though today they use that word in modern Hebrew. In the time of Chazal, Erisin was Kiddushin, and Kiddushin, you're an Ashes Ish, and she's Chayv Misa. So it's not, it's after Kiddushin that it's Erisin, and she's an Arusa, but before Nisulin. But today they use the word erisin that way, engagement. So if you have an announcement in the papers or whatever, they use the word arusa, his arsa, his ares, etc. Heorus. But today, chosn kala, we use the word chosn kala, also is not the original intention. If you look at chosn kala in Tanakh, what is it? A mother-in-law and a father-in-law. In fact, it says, "Umisos chosan al kala yosis alayach alokayich." So that seems to run counter to what he's saying. Because what does it mean, "Misos chosan al kala"? The Teretz says, everyone's masking that we use the word chosan and kala that way. And it's probably from time immemorial. But why do we use those terms for bride and groom? When in the Torah, Chamisha Chumshe Torah, it's never used that way. And those words themselves are used to mean son-in-law and daughter-in-law after marriage. So Reb Shamshon Raphael Hirsch says that in Yiddishkeit, to paraphrase Rashi in Oz Yoshir, in Shira Sayam, Rashi says on the Pasuk Zekeli Va'anvehu, what's next? Elikei Avi. Why do we mention Elokei Avi? L'cha'ayra, the immediacy of the relationship is what matters. Ancient history, what's it nageya? No, in Yiddishkeit there's no such thing. We have Masaira, and we have a relationship with Hashem that goes way back. Elokeinu Elokei Avosenu Elokei Avraham Elokei Yitzchak Elokei Yaakov. Elokei Avi is critical to the Zekeli. If you're a Jew, says Rav Shamshon Frohl Hirsch, you do not see a marriage as something that started from scratch today. You see a continuation of the Doiris of Klal Yisrael. You see the influence in the Hashbah on these children who are getting married, who are going to get married. You see that influence in the families that they come from. But more important than anything else, and that's my point about the mother-in-law jokes, that when a person is a chosan, he is entering into another family, and vice versa. So the irony, I think it's an irony, the pasuk says, Al kein yazov ish es aviv es imay, v'dovak v'ishtan. So he cleaves to his wife. So he leaves his parents' home to establish a home of his own. It's a fascinating thing that part of that leaving is to become part of another family, and she in reverse. So in other words, the families merge, and each child is now, the old saw about you're not losing your daughter, you're gaining a son-in-law. In Yiddishkeit it is that way. It really is. So the chibur of the mishpachas is part of the masair of the mishpachas. What's my point? My point is that when it says Es Eliezer Kenegdoi, it's not because they're going to have children in common, and it's not because of all the services that the wife will provide or the parnasa that the husband will provide, etc. It's because without that union you do not have a bias. And now the question is, what is the essential component of that bias? So the answer is the Isha. Why is an Isha called Akeres Habayis even before she has children? That's what the Medrash means. When she's barren of children, her worth is crystal clear that she is Ikara Shel Bayis. That's why the Medrash is not so distant as the Alshich thought from the Pashim Shat. Because when you have children and you're a mother, so we understand her as a kind of like a sada that produces. But when you look at the Isha without children, the question is, so what's the point of the Zivug? And the answer is, Ikara Shabbos. So you have a remarkable thing. In all Sifrei Kabbalah, when they ever speak about Akeres Habayis, who is the Akeres Habayis? Rachel. Reb Tzadok HaKohen has a fascinating ha'ora on this. He says that we have our perspective, the Rebbeinu Shlom has his perspective. L'moshel, Chazal say, what is written in the tefillin of the Rebbeinu Shlom? Mi ka'amcha Yisrael goyachad. What is written in our tefillin? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So, in the same way that there are two different perspectives, according to the Reb Tzadok HaKohen, Leah is the Rebbeinu, from the Rebbeinu Shlom's look on Klal Yisrael, Leah is the Akeres Habayis. Fascinating. And that's why Jews, he writes, are called Yehudim. It's very interesting. But from our perspective, why is Rachel the Akeres Habayis? And Rachel, in fact, until much later, but is an Akar. So he, Yaakov Avinu, is going to marry Rachel. And he works for Rachel. And Rachel is Mevaka al Baneo ki einenu. And there are many other remosim. And it's interesting that in the Tikkun Chatzos there are two segments, Tikkun Rachel and Tikkun Leah. And then in the bracha that was given when Naomi finally finds a manayak for Rus in the home of Boaz, and they get married. So the bracha is Kerachel Ukaleya Ashabonu Shnehem. So it's very fascinating. So if you look in terms of children, Leah is the predominant person, without a doubt. If you look in terms of Tachlis and Tafkid, Rachel has the prominent and predominant role. That is the definition of Akeres Habayis. How does the Vilna Gaon use that phrase here? So he says a very remarkable thing. And it runs a little bit counter to what we might have thought intuitively. The Gaon says, let's take a look. Cheinu Batayra. This is the middle of the fourth line in the first Bir Hagra. Cheinu Batayra Ayelis Ahovim Hu Saidois Hatayra. The Yalas Chein Hu Remes. Tadeo Yervucha Bechol Eis Udrush. Shemarve Bechol Eis. Marve b'choleis. What does it mean? Drush is marve b'choleis.
What's marve mean?
Right. What's kaisi revoya? What's kaisi revoya?
Overflowing.
Overflowing. Marve is a word that you use for liquids that you are providing, that you are nourishing, and of course, if you give enough, it flows over the cup. Kaisi revoya. What's marve? Marve b'choleis means that drush. Somehow, well, look at these shiurim. Now, let's say that I would stop now for a moment and I would switch over to some complicated sugya face in Hilchus, in Kilayim, I don't know, with all those diagrams. So, I mean, it's not that I would lose 3/4 of the oilam. I would lose the interest of 3/4 of the oilam. You know, the Chazon Ish once said, you know what's the true measure of Avas HaTorah? One of these very, very heavy Gemaras where it makes cheshbonis, and there's not too much lumdus there, and you go at it with tremendous enthusiasm. That's real avas atayra. The olam described in various Gemaras that used to come to the drush of the tanoim and amorayim was far greater and far more enthusiastic than the olam that came to the heavy-duty shiurim in Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. It's inevitable. Why? So the first thing that a person would say is because, I mean, maybe not, but one would think the first thing a person says, it's a lot easier. You know, you don't have to rack your brain so much, and you don't have to out the cheshbon so much, and that is a very faulty consideration. Why? Because it's like learning Rashi when we are little children. That does not demote Rashi. and you go back to the same Rashis at every stage in your life, and suddenly it's a different Rashi. Drush, real drush, proper drush, is something that could be very heavy and very complicated and extremely demanding, but still the people would be more interested in it. Why? Because it deals with you, with your life, with today. It isn't a narrow, sequestered thing. You could talk about a halacha, and it could be very important. But every halacha is a little bit outside of me, unless it's mamish nageya lemaisa. Halachas nageya lemaisa, they generally don't happen here in Shir. You know when they happen? Just when I'm about to make kiddush or hamotzi Friday night. That's when the fellow knocks on the door and he has a shaila. And I told you the maisa that once happened to me. This fellow was very polite. Politeness can sometimes be very dangerous. He comes knocking on the door, young fellow, just recently married, and he's staying by his parents. And obviously he has a shaila. But we just washed to make hamotzi. And there was a very big oilam in my house that Shabbos. Until everybody washed, took quite a while. And he's standing there, very polite. Finally, I made hamotzi, and I took my bite into the challah, and I swallowed it, and I asked him, "No?" He says, "My house is on fire, I don't know what to do." But every Shabbos, there's somebody that comes with some shaila or another. You know, the chol pot, and the refrigerator, and the recently somebody asked me, his alarm for what's it called, carbon monoxide alarm, went off, you know, and on it goes like that, you know, a whole Shabbos. It's true that at the moment it's important and relevant, but it's not fascinating. Why not? The person comes in and you start talking about Avraham Avinu, what's it nageya? And suddenly it's fascinating. Why? The answer is because it's you. It's the neshama. It's your kishkes. It's not this din or that din. It's what we're all about. And the drush was always to relate the Torah to the people by Asher Haim Sham. And that was why it was so popular and so successful. So according to the Gra, that's what he says. He says drush. How does he define it? Look at it again. He says that del yervucha b'chol eis hu drush shemarve b'chol eis. And what is the expression hadecha yervucha? He said before hu hachibuk. It's the embrace. Very interesting. When you're speaking about an embrace, you're talking about drush. Now, what about pshat? So he says something fascinating here. What does he say? He says that the expression ba'avosa tishke tamid hu pshat. Pashut means pshat. Lachain tishke ba'tamid b'li hefsek klal. This is very interesting. Always under the impression that the guy valued the ultimate level was what? Soid. And pshat is the first stage. Well, it's not a contradiction. Because if you think about it for a moment, what is the difference? If somebody will ask, in a husband and wife who are very, very close, you know, today you use an expression, I mean, madly in love. Well, madly, I don't know about madly, but that kind of relationship. So, Chazal tell us that the institution of tefillah for keri was made, and the Rambam makes this point very clear, was made in order shlo yimotze etzel ishtoi ketarnaga v'hamei v'nyovet. In other words, you have to keep going to the mikveh, and it's much more of a tircha in those days than it was today, so you control yourself. Does that change the ava? Of course not. But the zivug, the chibur, that's compared to sod. So what about the day-to-day? That's compared to pshat. That's what it means by avosa tishge tomit. What kind of ava is not a chibur mamish? That's pshat. So it's really not a contradiction at all. In other words, you can't always be with Sod, and nor can everybody be with Sod. But Sod is the ultimate Zivuk. That's what he says. In other words, you have Chibuk, you have Nishuk, and you have Zivuk. How does he call them? Yalas Chein, that's the Nishuk. Tader Yevucha is the Chibuk. So what's Zivuk? Ayeles Ahavim. And the Chein Hu B'Teira, Ayeles Ahavim Hu Saidai Sateira. So Sod is the actual physical contact that is the ultimate contact. Because Sod is the behind the veil, true and ultimate, you use the word penetration, of the secrets of the Torah. Masha Ein Kein Pshat, which is accessible to everyone, is the surface relationship. But the surface relationship is a constant. And that's what he means, that Ba'avosa Tishge Tomid is Dafka Pshat. And that's constant, and it's available to everybody. And then he writes, I'm not going to go into that, the next three lines are related to Kabbalah, and I'll just read them to you. He writes, the Omar ad ayeles ahavim zayin dvarim, v'achshav Omar gimel shehem dalet. Why? Because beginning it's keneged zayin tachtoinios, v'achshav huneged gimel rishoinos. The gimel rishoinos achochma bina and das. He's talking about the spheros now, and he says the first three, the gimel rishoinos achochma bina das. And then there is the Zayin Tachtoinios, that's from Chesed Gvur Tiferes, Eitzachod Yisod Malchus. So he has the four and the three. The seven and the three. So he says, Ayelas Ahavim is Chochma. Yalas Chein is Bina. Tadel Yevucha B'choleis Ba'avosa Tishke Tomid Das. Besod Ba'avosa She'i Tomid Nochach Ponecha Besod Hoylech Nichachai. And that, of course, is a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Perek Nun Zayin. All right, I'm not going to go into that at all, but as the Goyin understood Soid, he's not talking Soid. He's talking Pshat. The way we understand Soid, he's talking Soid. I don't know if you understood what I just said. You know, I don't know if you ever saw the Pirush of the Gra on Megillas Esther is divided Al-Pi Pshat and Al-Pi Soid. And then you go into the Al-Pi Pshat and you don't know half of what he's talking about because it's Al-Pi Soid. So like, what's going on? The Teretz says by him, Al-Pi Soid was Al-Pi Soid, and that was Al-Pi Pshat. For us, half of Al-Pi Pshat is Al-Pi Soid. So that's the same thing here. He wasn't trying to write esoterics. This is not his Pirush on Safra Ditznilsa. But it's not for us right now. The next pasuk. Look in the pasuk itself up on top of the page. The lama sishke b'ni b'zora usachabek chek nochriya. So I had an idea. I was reading recently a biography, if you want to call it that, of the Baba Sali. Actually, of the whole mishpacha. Someone dropped off a two-volume set in English. Must be a translation. Looks like a translation of something originally written in Hebrew. But it's from the whole mishpacha of Abu Chatzera, going way, way back to the time of Reb Chaim Vital. It's like, you know, really ancient, the hoary past, and until today. The family of Abu Chatzera, even the name Abu Chatzera, nobody's 100% sure where that name came from. But in any case, I started looking, and I'm saying to myself, is it possible for anyone to sell this kind of lifestyle? Imagine a person that besides really going out of his Dalai Lama's is always covering his eyes with a scarf. You ever see the pictures? So they're always wearing a hood. And the hood is covering their eyes. And they never looked at a woman in their lives. It's an amazing thing. And then you have expectations. So in a footnote over there, he writes that if you want to know the Baba Sali's like hasagas, So he was talking to an Einikol, and suddenly the electricity went out. It was Friday night, and the Einikol, who was 5 years old, he doesn't chap that it's usher to do this. So he took his Mishnayis that he was learning, and he brought it over to the nearest Shabbos to be able to read Lor Haner. So his Zaydah said to him, "You can't do that." So he says, "But then I won't be able to learn my Mishnayis." Was Mishnayis Masechta Shabbos? So he says, "I don't understand. You're 5 years old and you don't know Mishnayis Shabbos by heart?" Talking about expectations. You don't know Mishnayis Shabbos by heart? You're 5 years old already. Imagine a life that's pure to that extent, that all you do is learn, and all you do is stay in your same Dalet Amos, and there's a huge world out there with men and women and children and life, and things are happening, and they're... You could sell a life like that. You could tell people that's the ideal. When you look at this pasuk, you feel the pain of Shlomo HaMelech, or the pain of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Imagine, Ayelas Ahav V'Yalas Chayim. Torah is the most beloved and most desirable of women, okay? So where are you going? Why are you crossing the street? Why are you chasing after strangers? And there's a certain begging quality here. Please, don't make that mistake. Because the attraction is not only one of the physical, but because of the physical, it becomes a logical attraction. There's this huge world out there. What is it, just nisyonos? That's what the world is? It's just a bunch of nisyonos? How could it be? The Ribbono Shel Olam created this world. It's exciting, it's interesting, it's full of life. How can I sequester myself like this? And I'm going to sit and learn Yoyim of Alayla. I'm talking about a person who can handle it. I'm going to sit and learn Yoyim of Alayla, then I'll be away from the world. And where does this be'ikar come from? I think it comes from a sense that this is the world. The moment a person realizes that the world is a prozdor, everything changes. But to realize that the world is a prozdor, when every one of our senses and our whole physical dynamic is rooted in that, because we are physicality itself, is telling you otherwise. Very, very hard to live that way, even if you declare it ani mamin b'emunah shleima. You know, a person can go into the fires al kiddush Hashem, screaming and yelling, "I believe b'emunah shleima that there is another world." But when he lives the life in this world, it's very easy to ignore that. Why? Because emuna, to be tachon, to havana of olam hazeh, is stage upon stage of very profound transformation, which most of the time doesn't happen. Just like emuna doesn't always translate into bitachon. It's very, very rare that a person should be able to have... So they have a maisa about one of the earliest. He's going to Turkey. Now this is a legend, and you can take it for what it is. But in that book about the Baba Sali's ancestors, they have a story that there's a ship that's supposed to go to Turkey, and he doesn't have a penny to his name, and he needs to go to Turkey because the community in Yerushalayim made him, and they had lotteries in those days. Very interesting. That's a fascinating thing that I didn't know about. Like, who wants to leave his Dalet Amos and go and collect monies? Collecting monies is one of the hardest things a person could possibly do. And it's fraught with all kinds of busyness. And besides which, you have to be capable and talented to be able to do it at all. Nobody wanted to go. But they were desperate and helpless. You couldn't buy land. You couldn't do any work. Being in Yerushalayim under the Turks in those days was much worse even than being in Russia. And that was no picnic. So they used to go to the communities of Europe and collect money. And the greatest of them went, Chida, many others. So they had lotteries. And whoever got the lottery, got the lottery. This Zayda, this Elter Zayda, going back hundreds of years, of the Baba Sali. So he won. He was Zayda. He won the lottery. And everybody says, Oy veh, because he was never a person quiet in Nechbala Kalim, and he couldn't open up his mouth. He was a kvat veh. How is he? He doesn't know the world at all. But nobody wanted to take his place. So, you know, Baruch Shepetarani. So you go. So he goes. He doesn't have a penny to his name. He comes to the port in Jaffa, wherever it was, and he's going to Turkey. So he's going to Turkey, but he doesn't have the money for the passage. So he asks the captain, you know, maybe you take me anyhow, you know. I'll sit and learn on the ship or whatever. I don't know what he offered him. So the captain says, what, are you crazy? You have to have passage. So I'm just describing it. So he sits himself down on his mat, which he always took with him. This is a mat, a regular mat that's full of holes. And he puts it on the shore by the edge of the water. And the captain, like, you know, a few hours later, when they're well at sea, he sees that somebody screams, look down over here. He sees on the side of the boat, there's this fellow sitting on the mat, on the water, and he's moving along with the ship. No, so it takes a lot of emunah in these stories to be able to believe that happened. But it doesn't make a difference if the story is true or not, because they don't say it about you and they don't say it about me. But the fact of the matter is that these people, but what the story does tell me, the story tells me that bitachon on the level that you could reach, and this is the Navadika story of the person that doesn't have the ticket and he's waiting, and finally there's a fellow standing next to him and says, you're crazy, you're not going to get a ticket, you're not going to get on the train. He says, I have bitachon. Finally, he gets so frustrated that he buys a ticket for him. You see? I told you I'd get on the train. But Lamaisa, bitachon is a nishkin pasha tezach, and from emunah to bitachon is a stretch. It's a distance to be traveled. And from bitachon to a sense that this world is a prozor is the same distance again to be traveled. So you have to have a look on the world before you can negotiate this pasuk in Mishlei. Without that look, it's almost impossible. And that's why Mishlei keeps begging. There's a quality here of getting on your hands and knees. And it reminded me of the pasuk that I always speak about. The Baruch Shalom says, "Re'ei nasatu fonecha yoyim es hachayim es hatoiv es hamoviz ves hara." Couldn't be more clear than that. Toiv is life, and ra is death. And then the Baruch Shalom says, "Hu bachartu b'chayim," and you see Kivayochol getting on his hands and knees and begging Klal Yisrael, "Please make the right choice. Don't choose death. Who chooses death?" The Teretz is because we see life, we don't see death. Because we don't have the perspective that allows us to see death. At very best, we sometimes say, okay, it's life, but I'm not supposed to enjoy it, so I'll sit and learn. Is that notion that it's ayeles ahovim v'yalas chein ba'avos atish getomid is a vision, it's a dream. For a person who's anchored in this world, it becomes an impossible dream. So he has to beg. Says the Goyim. The Lama Sishge Bini Bezara, who neged Ha'isha Zara, he Hachemda. Utachabek Chek Nochria, he Hataiva. The two monsters in the Goyim's lexicon over and over again in Mishlei, which we've encountered. Taiva and Chemda. The higher human aspect of desire and the animal desires that he has, equal to all animals. So the physical desires, the appetites, those are animal instincts. But there are higher desires, kavod, gezel, you know, there are, you want to, today, some mumchim would say that there are also some animals who have these instincts. But these require in the human being a certain measure of seichel. And furthermore, there's a very big difference, which the Goyen has already mentioned many times. There are certain desires that you can calm by providing the person with the object of his desire. He becomes spent, and he's not interested anymore until his desire grows again. You eat your fill. There comes a point where you couldn't look at another piece of food, even if you had the biggest appetite in the world. And the same thing, of course, with women. But when it comes to kavod, there's never enough.
Emes.
I want to tell you something. You don't even begin to know what kavod is, and the taiva for kavod. You're a tzaddik. There are people People kill for kavod. You wouldn't kill anybody for kavod. Yeah, for geld.
No, not geld.
No, people would kill for geld for sure also. And not only that, they'll bring the whole world down for geld. It's neirav oyim. But you see, that's something. You don't have an animal. You know, you don't say the porpoises know how to talk, but they don't know how to kill the world for geld. You know, there's a human thing. And it knows no limits. Oyev kesef. Lo yisba kesef. But it doesn't say oyev eichel lo yisba eichel, because not shaykh. Because eichel, when you're saveya, you're saveya. The stomach says no more. The new mahalach for people who are obese is to deny the apparatus the sense of hunger, because they feel full much earlier and they stop eating. Fascinating. But in kavod and in these other inyanim, there's no such thing. Because first of all, do you ever imagine, go to Donald Trump and tell him, how many buildings do you have with your name already? What's the nafkamina on another building? It's ridiculous. So sit down and learn a little bit, or whatever. Yeah. So the teretz is, there's no such thing. And there's always someone that's bigger than you or more. You know, that's my thing with the helicopter. I don't see it anymore, so I don't talk about it so much. But for years, I used to go on I go every day on the FDR drive to yeshiva. I'll be doing that Bezos Hashem soon also. It's the upkimmonish of the century, by the way. But all right. Anyhow, the BQE, not the FDR so much, but the BQE. It's nishtaglay. Especially the guy, there's 50 cars, mamish bumper to bumper, and you went, there's still 1 inch left between you and the guy in front of you, so the guy behind you gives a honk. You know, what are you honking? So I should go 1 inch further. So you could go 1 inch further, then you're tzufriden. That's a dreite welt. Anyhow, that's what I deal with. The whole trip is like that. Anyhow, but on the FDR drive, we pass by on the side of the East River. So at the side of the East River, there's a marina, and there are usually two or three yachts docked at the marina. There's one yacht that's docked there every day for 4 years. Now, this person is not using his yacht because it's always there. The top of the yacht is a little helicopter. It looks almost like a toy, but it's real. It's a helicopter for one or two people. You know, they're in. What's the helicopter for?
It is a toy.
Well, what is the helicopter for? What's its point? So the helicopter is for, in case there's some distress, or in case you have to go from a little bit further out to the port. So instead of going in a boat like this, or in a dinghy, so you go in a helicopter. It's a chashibus. But what's the point of having a helicopter if you never use the boat to begin with? So I was thinking about this, you know, when you get a little sedate from all that traffic, and you can't think in learning because it makes you, you know, altegezubadera, so you have to think about something. So you look around, what can you think about, and still remain a religious Jew. So it's very limited. So I think about this helicopter. After 4 months of thinking about the helicopter, I came to the maskana that this fellow wants the yacht to stay there, and he wants the helicopter to be on the yacht because he's showing chevra like me and the hundreds of thousands that are driving up and down the FDR how rich he is and that he has a helicopter. So believe it or not, like someone wanted to bring me a raya from a sefer somewhere, somebody comes over to me, he says, I want to show you something interesting because he heard my shiur. And once in one of those shiurim, I mentioned this myself. He said, I want to show you something interesting. So he brings me a printout from a New York Times article. And the New York Times article says as follows, basically. It's talking about the sale of yachts, and especially in a kind of like a difficult financial, you know, matzah that the world is in. And this is, go back about a couple of years. But it was then difficult also. So he says that today, the people who buy yachts, though, they seem to be impervious to the market and all these things. They buy yachts anyhow, but just to have a yacht doesn't mean anything. So from now on, everybody who buys a yacht has to buy a yacht with a
helicopter.
Yeah. Mamish bizarre, lush and black, and white. That's such a no. Now, I realize why he's gone, because I don't see him anymore. Because if everybody has a helicopter, it doesn't mean anything anymore. This is the world. So when he says taiva and chemda, these are two different things entirely. And the Goyin had it aray so klar, and I ask myself, how could the Goyin have it aray so klar? All he's doing a whole day is sitting and learning Yom Valayla non-stop. Where is his knowledge of the world? Let me just finish this, and then we'll continue next time with the rest. He says, what's the difference between taiva and chemda? So he writes, the difference is tishge and techabeg. Why? For amal etzel hazora tishge, ki bechemda ein hanolo klal be'emes. There's really no satisfaction. V'roidev tomit v'yogeya esatzmai, v'gam balaylo lo shachav libay, v'haynu shu mashga oisai. It makes him constantly busy and preoccupied yoimim v'layla. Aval hataiva, she yoyshev beveisu imamali ta'avosai oma utachabek, that you embrace it. And then he writes, k'neged adalid l'mala, this is al pisayit. So this distinction is very, very telling, but the Goyin says it applies to the values of Torah as well. In Torah, this ayelas on yalaschena, I don't have the time to go into it, but you also have both of those midas, l'toiva. There's the chibuk and the chibur midah, and there is also the kavod midah. How do I know there's the kavod midah? Ein kavod ela Torah. That's right. So you have both of these midos being described. The lama tishke b'ni b'zara usachabek chek nachriyasa. It's like this plaintive wail, like Torah munachas b'keren zavis, I told you. Torah is in a corner of a corner. It's not even in a corner. It's in the corner of a corner. Why should it be in the corner of the corner if it's so desirable? The answer is because you have to have the eyes to see and the heart to feel. And when someone is busy with Olam Hazeh, he doesn't see it. He doesn't see it, Nebuch. But that's the lama. So why should you be Shaygeh b'ni b'zara u'sachabek chek nachriya?